It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the 1865 Match Report. I'm joined by Adam and we're recording this the morning after Forest produced a confident performance to beat West Ham United 2-0. Goals and injury time in both halves from Taiwo and Callum Hudson-Odoi sealed a performance that was full of attacking threat and defensive resolve. Nuno made two changes with Danilo and Felipe coming into a familiar 4-2-3-1 shape. So that gave us Sells in goal, a back four of Williams and Tavares out wide, and a Brazilian combination of Felipe and Murillo in the middle. South American connection continued, with Danilo partnering Dominguez at the base of midfield, and then a line of three, Alanga, Gibbs-White and Hudson-Odoi behind Taiwo Awoniyi. Forest started brightly and showed plenty of attacking intent, with Tavares bombing forward, putting Soufal on his arse and centering the ball for Alanga, whose shot was saved. There was a sloppy moment a bit later as Forest won a free kick in their own half, in West Ham's half, but one of the passes fell short and Gibbs-White had to take a yellow card for bringing down their man as they broke. Few murmurs round the ground as we worried about the lapses of concentration that have plagued Forest this season. Former Forest favourite Mikel Antonio was struggling to muscle his way past our defence, but he did get clear of Felipe at one point, only for Murillo to nick the ball off his foot as he shaped to shoot. Huge chances of you'll never beat Murillo, which were well deserved. And from then on, Forest took control of the game, with Tavares in particular breaking forward at great pace. He had a couple of shots, none of which were anywhere near the target. Then Awoniyi had a header saved by Areola, whose imperious form continued as he stopped a long-range shot from Danilo. We were beginning to think this was just going to be one of those days, but 5 minutes into time added on, Dominguez played a beautiful through ball to Awoniyi, who turns his defender and places his shot past their keeper. The goal improved the atmosphere in the second half and Forest continued where they left off. A high ball finds Alanga in space. His first touch looked awful, but he somehow recovered to produce a fantastic volley, which Areola did well to save. Murillo had a header, which somehow didn't go in. There were more wild shots from Tavares, but then Antonio gets away from his man and Williams brings him down just outside our box. Ward-Prowse steps up to take the free kick and you feel the nerves around the ground. But unlike in recent games, the Forest defence was ready and organised and Ward-Prowse's shot goes just over and wide. Awoniyi had another header go over, but then he gets dumped onto the floor and is replaced by Origi, who takes the right wing berth with Alanga moving to the striker's position. And then the first of the two big incidents of the game. West Ham win a free kick just inside our half. Dominguez tussles with Calvin Phillips as he tries to take the kick, and Phillips shoves him over, both players then getting a yellow card for the altercation. A couple of minutes later, Morgan Gibbs-White continues doing what he's done all game. He receives the ball, turns to beat his marker, but then Phillips puts a high boot in and Gibbs-White goes to ground clutching the top of his foot. Phillips gets a second yellow and it looks like Forest have the opportunity to put the game to bed. At this point, Antonio, who didn't look fully fit, is replaced by Maxwell Cornet, who would then play a part in the next big talking point. Swashbuckling Williams breaks into the box and tangles with Cornet. The referee ignores it as Williams falls over and then play continues. Eventually, it goes to VAR, but they side with the on-field verdict, even though replays show Cornet standing on Williams' ankle, bringing him down in the box. Nuno Espirito Santo then gets a booking for his protests. We're followed by more chances for Forest, including getting the ball in the net, but it's ruled out as Yates, who'd replaced Dominguez, is offside. West Ham then give us a nervy few minutes as they pile forward in an attempt to get something out of the game. We go to a back five as Omar Bamardelli replaces Gibbs-White. But again, right at the end of time added on, Williams brilliantly beats his man, cuts the ball back into the box, and it falls to Hudson-Odoi, who continues his scoring streak with a brilliant goal. So that's how it finished, 2-0 to Forest, and judging by the reaction of the players and the managers, they knew that this was not only a good result, but a fantastic performance.
The 1865 Match Report.
We're pleased to announce that this episode of 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green Kings Sport venues are showing every single televised Forest fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. If you download the Green Kings Sport app, you won't just get 10% off all drinks anytime there's a match on the TV, but this month there's also free Guinness to be won and the chance to win one of six holidays. And you'll be supporting us here at 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. Now it's back to your podcast.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
So, Adam, as I said before, at the final whistle, to me, this felt like this was a really, really significant win. How was it for you?
Look, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, these Premier League wins just feel unbelievable, don't they? I mean, you don't get them every week, so when you get that, it's great. I mean, the atmosphere in the ground was a lot better today, and I think it's probably because of the goal just before half-time. I mean, the second half was absolutely rocking, you know, like it was a bit better. And maybe that's all we needed. Maybe we needed to go up in 1-0 up at half-time. Maybe we just needed that better start. But yeah, it was fantastic. And there's not really a lot of fault I can put on any Forest player today.
But yeah, I mean, there was a couple of things that I noticed. And I mentioned it in our group chat, which was in the first half, I suddenly realised why Tavares is getting in the side instead of Toffolo, because you'd notice not every attack, but good few attacks, Tavares would then be bombing forwards and he was almost playing like as a second striker alongside Iwonyi. And it's that inverted fullback thing that everyone goes on about Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp doing. But instead of being an extra midfielder, he's almost like an extra attacker.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely say I've not been the biggest fan of Tavares since we signed him. And I didn't think the signing made an awful lot of sense at the time. But and it may just be because I'm a massive Harry Toffolo fan as well. I love Toff. I think he's fantastic. But he was so good yesterday, Tavares was. I mean, the way he bombed forward, the way he broke the lines, he just gave them something extra to think about. And I think he's always in space because they were never defending for a fullback being so far forward. But what we did well is that when he did bomb forward, when he did get out of position, we didn't seem to look bad defensively because he was out of position either. Like the gap that he left was filled by one of the two midfielders or was just covered by one of the centre-halves temporarily. And it allowed Tavares to bomb forward. And so did Williams, to be fair. You know, both fullbacks were trying to find space. But when Tavares is really close to being a proper complete sort of wing-back, isn't it? Because he gets forward well. He carries the ball brilliantly. He's got a really strong run. You know, he keeps himself upright. He gets touched and he carries on. He's not like a, you know, he bombs forward. But I don't know what they need to do with him, but he has got to work on his shooting. He loves taking a shot, but he can't do it for love nor money.
To be fair, I counted three shots by him. The first two were absolutely wild. And then the third one was almost on target, and the bloke next to me goes, he's getting closer.
That's the thing though, right? So he gets forward really well, he gets himself into those positions. Do you know if he actually could shoot really well and get them on target? Yeah. He'd get like 5-10 goals a season.
Yeah, it's like he gets a nosebleed or panics or something. But yeah, it wasn't, and I mean, I noticed it again in the last game as well, and against Newcastle, that he was doing this. So it's obviously a deliberate ploy, and it does give us those extra numbers up front. Which, and as he said, they weren't expecting it, so they didn't really know how to cover him.
Yeah, I mean, he was exploiting all sorts. He was getting in those little pockets of space that a number 10 normally gets into. But yeah, it actually, in a weird kind of way, allows Gibbs-White to get on the ball a bit more, and it actually allows Gibbs-White a bit more space, because if it's just Gibbs-White in the 10 role, he's been marked out of games before. So now when you've got Tavares breaking up there, they're having to sort of compensate for Tavares being there. So they can't have two men on Gibbs-White. So when Gibbs-White gets the ball, he's actually able to do a little bit more with it in space.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's deliberate, but that is happening.
I get the feeling that it is deliberate because, just because he's been doing it so consistently, and I couldn't see what the pattern was, but he doesn't do it every time. So I think there's some sort of trigger that he's looking for when to make that break. I also wanted to have a quick word about Nicolas Dominguez. I know you're a big fan of his. I thought he was outstanding yesterday.
I think I was campaigning that we sign him in the summer before he came, and then he comes and he's been exactly as good as I knew he would be. I mean, the ball into Taiwo for his goal, it's one of those balls where, like, if Kevin De Bruyne does it or something, match of the day, gushing over it and being like, oh, it's a great ball into the striker. It was just, and he does that. He's got the ability to get forward really well. But I think I was impressed yesterday. I think defensively he was really good as well. Yeah. And he's not a six. He's not a natural six anyway, but he's sort of given the ability that he can play 6, 8 or 10. And yeah, to have that in one of your midfield is just absolute joy.
And actually, I'd say Danilo had a very good game, especially in the first half. He was putting through, he's not really a six and he's not really an eight, but he was putting through some very good passes and we were quite solid defensively with that pair there. Speaking of which, Dominguez did get subbed, replaced by Yates towards the end of the game. And I thought that was a good plan because there was, I had the feeling he was going to get himself a second yellow card. He got the first one, obviously, in his clash with Calvin Phillips. Now, Calvin Phillips, like I like Calvin Phillips because I live in Leeds and my local pizza shop has a Calvin special because that's where his mum works. But he was awful.
Yeah, it must be something about playing at the City Ground that he doesn't seem to like because we were actually reminiscing a little bit. I remember him getting sent off against us for Leeds when I think Daryl Murphy scored or something. I remember, was it New Year's Day or was it Boxing Day maybe? I think it might have been New Year's Day and he got sent off. And I was like, he just loves getting sent off against Forest, doesn't he? Like he's, but nah, he was poor on the day. But I think the thing is that, and I'm sure what David Moyes would be saying to him after the game is that when you're on a yellow, you've got to be more careful. You can't be so stupid. Like, it was a really naive thing to do when you're on a yellow card. You've made the referee have the decision. And we've been on the wrong end of this, haven't we? Bournemouth, for example, with Justin Cliver. We've been on the wrong end of it where the referee hesitates the second yellow. They're like, I don't really want to give a second yellow because a second yellow means VAR can't get involved. We know that from Willy Bolly's challenge against Bournemouth. So I think the referee they hesitate to give the second yellow a lot of the time because they know VAR can't help them. But in this instance, it was just so easy. It was such an easy decision for the referee. It's a yellow card offence, already on a yellow, nice and easy.
Yeah.
And I will say, I don't know if it changed the game that much because I think we were in control anyway.
Yeah.
I think we were pretty in control for the whole game. So I don't know if it changed the game as such, but it just meant that we were even more comfortable than we were.
And then the other big incident, refereeing incident of the game. First of all, I have to say, yeah, as you've mentioned, Nico Williams was fantastic throughout the game. But he breaks down the right-hand side as normal. A lot of space to run into. When it happened in real time, I thought it was a penalty. I thought Cornet had tripped him, but where I sit, I can just see the replay monitors in one of the boxes. So everyone turns around looking up at that, and then I'm looking at it through the glass, and I thought, oh no, it's not a penalty. He's going away from goal. They just get their legs tangled. And then I watched it again on Match of the Day, and it's clear as day.
Yeah, it's such a weird one. I mean, Nico Williams is the kind of player that us as fans, that's how we think we'd play for Forest. he jumps into every challenge. He gives 110. He's such a workhorse. Like, he's an absolute pleasure to watch as a fan, you know, because he kind of just gets it. He puts so much in. But yeah, I mean, I sit lower Trent, so this was literally right in front of me. And first impression, oh, that's a penalty, Stonewall, he'll give it. And then when he didn't give it, I thought, I'm not worried because it'll go to VAR and they'll give it.
And it was quite annoying because it was another of those where, because play just carried on, it was like the referee was completely ignoring it.
Yeah. It's weird, those situations, because do you ever just sometimes sit there and you think like, oh, just kick the ball out of play and let VAR look at it? Because that's a little bit how we thought, and then it got part of play anyway. But yeah, I don't understand how VAR have looked at that. Because the thing is, if you're not looking for the right bit of and you're not looking for the point of contact and the point of the foul, you might not see it in real time. And I know slowing it down makes it look worse, but slowing it down in this instance actually helps because he stands on his foot. Like, it's clear as day. It was, I think it was probably accidental, by the way, by Cornet. It wasn't, I don't think he meant to do it, but he stands on his foot and Nico goes down. And it is as stone wall as you want.
And even though he wasn't heading towards goal, I mean, the thing that he did later on that Nico does is the cutback. So,
yeah.
It was prevented a clear chance. So I read yesterday that we've hired Mark Clattenburg as a referee's consultant because I know Nuno got booked yesterday for complaining about this. I think we've had 3 or 4 apologies from PGMOL for game changing situations. That's our points deduction right there.
Well, the thing is with these apologies and stuff, I mean, like, they're absolutely nothing. I mean, I don't know if you saw that it was a game in the Belgium League, wasn't it? I think it was Anderlecht, where they had a decision go against them. And then either the game is now being replayed or the result was altered because of the mistake. And it's like, well, do we need to get to a point where that happens, where games are either replayed or a goal is given, or whatever it might be in that game, or a point is given to you? Like, is that where we need to get before referees take accountability? Because an apology is accountability that you've done something wrong. Absolutely. But it's no consolation to us whatsoever.
Yeah, especially when we're at the wrong end of the league looking over our shoulders.
And luckily, this one didn't change the outcome of the game at all. But if West Ham had nicked a late equaliser before we scored the second goal, well could have.
I was immediately thinking this is going to be just like Newcastle, where we don't get the VAR decision and they go up the other end and score. And look, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but it was a very, very weak shot that was very easy for Sells to deal with. Speaking of which, there's one other point. So at 45 minutes, we started chanting, "It's 45 minutes, it's time to go home," to which the West Ham fans replied, "How shit must you be? It's only 0-0. Then Ward-Prowse gets a corner and you could feel this like dread fall across the crowd because we knew what happened with West Ham last time. And we dealt with it. And obviously a 1-1 scores. So we sing cheerio at him. And then in the second half, there were 2, I think, free kicks that Ward-Prowse took from pretty dangerous areas. One from where Williams took down Mikel Antonio for no real reason. But I have to say, I was watching our defenders very, very closely, and Felipe and later on Yates, you could see them going round, talking to all the players and telling them exactly where to be. There was a real determination to make sure that we don't be stupid from set pieces. And that stood out to me.
Yeah, definitely. I think we dealt with set pieces better, but I think also if you don't give set pieces away, you can't see goals from set pieces. And we didn't give as many away yesterday. And you've got to think that that is completely the game plan to do that. I mean, Ward-Prowse is probably one of, if not the best dead ball specialist in world football, never mind just the Premier League. You can't give him. We saw that at the London Stadium, a game that, in my opinion, we didn't deserve to lose. And we gave away silly goals from corners. And yesterday, we got a free kick. The only one I was really worried about was the one that you just mentioned from when Nico challenged. And it was like, I was like, there's nothing we can do about this. If he wants to pop this top corner, it's 1-1, that's it. And it sort of went over the bar and I thought, okay, this might be our day a little bit more now. Because he normally gets that on target at least.
I did think actually though, Sells had it, if it had gone in at the top corner, Sells had it covered as well. So everything was right about our setup for it. So that's pretty good. A quick word on Felipe and Murillo. So a Brazilian centre-half pairing. Murillo gets the plaudits because he did that fantastic stop on Antonio. But I thought Felipe made a big difference just in terms of organisation. He was vocal and telling everyone what to do and making sure everyone was doing their jobs throughout the game.
Well, I think that Nuno might have found his centre-back partnership here because Omar Bandelli has been fantastic when he's played, but obviously he's a lot younger. He doesn't have that experience. And Nia Carte, I think that I would say that Niakate and Murillo, I mean, ability wise, are our two best centre halves, but you've also got to think about partnerships. And I don't want to be lazy and be like, oh, Felipe and Murillo are both Brazilian, they must get on. But you would imagine that Murillo will see Felipe as a bit of a mentor type person. He's played at the highest level, he's played in the Champions League. You know, they're both Brazilian, so they will have that little bit of a connection on a language perspective as well. And maybe those little things are going to help. And the thing is, Murillo could play next to me. I think he'd still be all right. But having Felipe next to him yesterday, I think it was just, I think it helped him for a lot of reasons of when to step out, when not to step out, when to play the long pass, when not to play the long pass. And the only time we got caught out really was when Antonio broke free and Murillo was just imperious to not let Antonio pass. And he didn't look fully fit, to be fair, Antonio. I'm not like, I loved him so much when he was here. And I, from the nostalgic point of me, if he comes to Forest in the summer on a free, I'd be absolutely fine with it because I loved him while he was here.
When he was subbed and he was at the far side of the ground, so he had to walk all the way around in front of the Trent end, I was really pleased to see the applause that he got.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's still a lot of love for him as a player. But yeah, he certainly didn't look fully fit yesterday. I think he's been rushed back a little bit.
Yeah. And then finally, at the final whistle, so we had the status quo playing, which apparently is because Rick Parfitt's son lives in Nottingham. And yeah, I'm not that keen on status quo myself. But what I thought, first of all, like the players come around to applaud the fans, which is great to see. The three Brazilians all walk together around. And then that was followed by Nuno. And I don't remember him doing this in exactly the same way, but he had a massive smile on his face and had his hands above his head while he was applauding. And I was thinking, there's something about this performance today. It looks like the team's gelling in a way that they probably haven't done maybe all season.
It was definitely, I would say it could be considered the most complete performance under Nuno, because against Newcastle away when we won, we did play really well, but the goals just came on the break, really. I mean, we just caught Newcastle out. And the Man United game, again, we really was grinding out a result. But I think yesterday was the most complete performance under Nuno so far. Defensively, we were really good. The midfield looked solid. We looked like we could score goals going forward. I mean, everything just clicked yesterday. And we all know the fixture list. We all know we've got some tough games coming up, but there's no reason to go into those games with any fear. Go into those games with the mindset that you can get something out of it. You know, like Villa away, Liverpool at home. I mean, that sounds like no, you know, a lot of people will say that's, you know, you're not going to get anything out of those two games. But I get a bit of renewed confidence after yesterday that we can.
Not least because both those teams play quite high and we've shown that we can break very, very well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the pace we have on the counter, I mean, like the one where Alanga didn't score, that goal only really comes from the fact that we have so much pace going forward when we actually get the ball on the counter.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he didn't score. He sat right behind it and I thought, blazed it over. And I'm sure he'll say it took a bubble. But
yeah, and there was also that one I think maybe Williams had released him and I thought his first touch was awful because it sort of bounced up in the air, but then he just volleyed it. And it was
There was actually a couple, weren't there? Because there was that one. And there was also Danilo on the full volley who absolutely levered it. And I actually want to shout out Arioli yesterday.
Yeah.
I think he played really well.
Yeah.
He kept the score down.
Yeah, he was definitely their player of the match.
So we'll leave it there. A confident performance full of attacking intent and defensive resolve. It was the first time I'd heard the fans sing for Nuno Espirito Santo, and we can see the signs that this team's starting to come together. Players and the manager's reaction at the final whistle show that they recognise the significance of the match too, so let's hope we can use this as the turning point of our season. We've got tough matches against Manchester United and Liverpool to come, but we'll be back next week after the Villa game. All that remains is for me to say thank you to Adam for joining me today, and thank you to you for listening as Forest continue rocking all over the world.
Podcast Network.